Westchester Talk Radio is broadcasting live.
News, trends, and more.
No one knows Westchester County better than we do.
We are Westchester Talk Radio.
Good day and welcome to Westchester Talk Radio, westchestertalkradio.com, produced by Shark Creative. That is Shark with a C, not a K. You see the Shark Creative logo on the wall behind me here in orange and blue. I'm John Marino, and we are produced by Shark, like I said, and brought to you by our good friends at places like Entergy, the Indian Point Energy Center, supporting our communities through April of 2021. Lipolis Electric, don't be left in the dark. Get Lipolis. And by Hightower Westchester, managing your wealth to a fiduciary standard. We are joined here today on Westchester Talk Radio, the Cup of Joe political show, by Shelley Mayer. Shelley Mayer, state senator for the 37th district, representing a wide swath of Westchester, a district that begins in Yonkers, moves up the Sound Shore area, cuts back in towards the White Plains area, and heads up 684 into the Bedford Mount Kisco portion of the county. So that is a range where, Shelley Mayer, you took over from George Latimer. You won an election, special election, after George Latimer was elected the county executive back in 2018. You took this seat in April of 2018. You won a special election. I would talk with George when he was state senator for a number of years in different media venues about what it's like to represent a district like this, like the 37th, where you go from very urban Yonkers to almost rural Bedford and Mount Kisco, and yet you have to make it all work with the very suburban Sound Shore and White Plains areas in between.
It really is so challenging. I always, in the old days when people came in the office, I always showed them the map, because the map shows how crazy it is. So, you know, they're on McLean Avenue, where Yonkers starts, at the Bronx border, which is, as you say, an urban community, a highly Irish-American community, all the way up through, of course, East Chester, Bronxville, Tuckahoe. Then, and you left this part out, John, the south side of New Rochelle, now significantly.
Yeah, right. Also part of that, too, which I consider part of the Sound Shore area.
Yes, but just the south side of New Rochelle, the north side of New Rochelle.
Right.
Then you go around through the whole Sound Shore, then the south side of White Plains, the north side of White Plains, and then all the way up to Bedford, Armonk, North, and North Castle, there up to the Connecticut border. You know, it's a fantastic district. It's really been an honor for me to represent it, and I'm running again this November, and I have an opponent, so I'm taking it very seriously. But my view was, one, I had to get known everywhere, because I wasn't known well out of Yonkers. Two, I had to serve everywhere, and I had to serve my constituents as, you know, as aggressively as I could and as responsibly as I could, both on the constituent side, which I really believe is the heart of being an elected official at the state level or local level, as well as obviously policy legislation in the state budget, and then speaking out. So there's sort of three component elements. It's been a wonderful experience. I hold George as a great model. He did it exceptionally well. George was in the minority, however, a good deal of his time, and I've been in the majority. The majority has a responsibility to actually negotiate and get stuff done more than the minority could. So I have this additional responsibility, particularly as chair of education, as you pointed out, John, to be a real outspoken advocate for public schools and financing, and for, frank, all schools, private schools too, religious schools, higher education. So I have my hands full, but really I've been humbled and honored and tried never to lose my humility, because this is something people bestowed upon me. I'm fortunate to have it. I have to earn it and do the best I can. I think people have a residue of goodwill even in this highly partisan environment.
Now, you were an assemblywoman first. You were elected four times to that position.
Right.
What's the difference between being an assembly person and a state senator? Is it apples and oranges, the comparison there, pretty much? Or is there a really big difference there?
I think it's apples and oranges. One, in the assembly, there's 150, and about 106 of them are Democrats. So if you're a Democrat, as I am, from, you know, one place, which I only represented one city then, Yonkers, you know, I was Yonkers. That was my job, to fight among my colleagues to get my little piece of the pie. Now I'm in the Senate, There's 40 Democrats out of 63. We don't all agree, as you pointed out. We have a lot of New York City members who represent districts are quite different than mine. We have upstate members whose interests are different. So there's a lot of internal compromise about what issues, what legislation, what should legislation look like. And then the governor, you know, pre-COVID, he was always a strong governor. He does not always agree with either the Assembly or the Senate. Just because we're the same party, as you say, there's a misconception that we agree. We have fundamental disagreements, arguments. You know, we managed to get along, and I hold him in very high regard for the COVID experience and otherwise. I've always had a great relationship, but I have strong disagreements. I did pre-COVID, and I do post-COVID with certain things that have happened. So it is apples and oranges. The Senate is a wonderful opportunity to make change happen. That's why I ran. I ran in for it in the Assembly, and I ran for it in the Senate. I think we have the obligation to continue to push New York State along to be a leader. And that's what I try to do. Never perfectly, but that's what I try to do.
When it comes to negotiating with the other side, with Republicans,
yes,
or someone from another party, or someone within your own party who may not agree with you, how do you go about convincing someone that your way might be the right way to go? Or, you know, I see good things in you, your way too, your opponent's way. Well, I shouldn't say opponent, but the other person's way. You see good things there too. How can we get together and make this work?
Well, I think it depends on your style. I mean, I am a believer that the democratic process benefits by having respectful debate. I just start with that. I was awed by the Senate when I went there as a young person to work for Attorney General Abrams. I was just this idea that people debated and convinced each other. And, you know, I'm still naive enough to believe there's great value in that. I think our world has been devalued by, frankly, the conversations of the tone of the president, which has seeped into our local politics, very divisive, sort of hateful, inability to listen. I think that's very unfortunate. So how do I use it? Well, we're going to talk about bail reform, but I voted for bail reform. I thought it was absolutely essential. That being said, I heard my constituents and my police chiefs bring up some specific things that needed to be addressed in amendments to our bail reform. I brought them back. I was a strong proponent for them. Not all my colleagues were on board, but in the end, they understood that if you're going to make big change, you have to make it work in various communities. They're not all like New York City. We have different issues. And so the concerns that I wanted addressed in the amendments to bail reform, some of which we achieved, reflected my district's very legitimate concerns, and I brought them to the table. And then again, we have leadership with Andrea Stewart Cousins, who, in part because she lives in the suburbs and she represents a suburban district, understands New York is a complex place. There we have cities, and we have Brooklyn and Queens and the Bronx, and then we have, you know, Larchmont and Maronick and New Rochelle and Armonk, and their experience is different. And we're making statewide laws that apply statewide. So they have to have a little bit of give and take to reflect that. And the other thing I would say is I don't publicly criticize any of my colleagues, Democrats or Republicans, outside of the political process. And politics is one thing. But once you're governing, I believe that you should have those disagreements on the phone or in person. I'm not a public trasher of people. I think that has really hurt our belief that we can do better in the democratic process. We're so fortunate that we can elect people who have their own opinions. Not every country has it, but we devalue it in this current environment. And I'm very concerned about that.
In this COVID era, as badly as COVID has hit New York State, how are we doing in our recovery?
Well, I think overall, and this is where I give the governor and his administration great credit, really, nobody knew quite how bad it was going to be. I remember, and you may remember, John, when it first said, oh, we're going to close for 2 weeks. I thought, oh, 2 weeks, you know, 2 weeks is fine.
I thought 3 weeks maximum we'd be back to a normal life. And here we are 8 months later.
Exactly. 8 months, you know, and some things have gone backwards. But overall, we brought the rate down to about 1%. We had way too many deaths. And those deaths are personal, not only to me who knew people, but to all of us in our communities, certainly being so close to New York. I take it very personally how many people died and how many families have lost loved ones. I think we have done well and basically made decisions based on science. We gave the governor the power to make these decisions. And so when we disagreed, like this should open sooner or this should open later or schools should be different, we had to argue with him. We as legislators delegated a great deal of power. I think it was the right thing to do. We had basically a state of emergency. You needed one person in charge. Make good decisions, make bad decisions, take the credit, take the blame. And I don't regret that. But it made a more difficult situation because we were on the phone every single day, starting in early April until I would say July, every day with the governor's office at 5:30, 7 days a week, reviewing the statistics, the decisions, arguing with them about things that our constituents wanted and needed, arguing about what should open first. You remember the phases. We were very much engaged. I certainly was, as my colleagues were, in articulating what our constituents' concerns are. And there were people on both sides. You know, I had people, how dare you not open up the economy? You're killing the economy. I think we're in a national emergency and we had to make science-based decisions. And unfortunately, our economy has suffered terribly. And we are going to have to find a path out of this, but it can't be at the expense of people dying.
And now we see the changes we have to make in Brooklyn and Queens and Rockland and Orange County. And we have to hope, as Mayor de Blasio said, 2 to 4 weeks, basically, at best, if everyone gets back into compliance. And yet this could go on longer again, this partial lockdown of these areas. And we seem to be taking a step back there. Yet, if we all work together, I'm of the belief that, and I'm sure you are too, that if we continue to work together, we can get out of this step by step.
I totally agree, John. And I think on balance, New Yorkers have done a very good job of really recognizing we had to be on the same page. And the governor deserves credit for that, too, because he was for this wear a mask before, you know, long before Trump, who never came around to it. And our federal government gave mixed signals, but never said everyone must wear a mask indoors. I remember that when that happened at the supermarkets, people were like, oh, they can't tell me. Well, yes, wisely, they did tell us, and it had a good result. So I think most people, the vast majority of people, are willing to sacrifice for the common good. You know, we have a complicated group of, you know, millions of people live in the United States, and they're not all going to be willing to. But in New York, I think we were able to really get a feeling of common sacrifice for the common good and to get New York ahead of the game. And on balance, we have done extremely well.
Now we move over to budgets, and the state budget, of course, is due every April. So we have a good 6 months or so till we get a new budget in 2021. Yet you've got to be looking ahead at that budget as to what stays, what goes, where can we work something out to keep at least some of this of what we need.
Absolutely. Well, we're not even going to wait till then, because in the budget, we gave the governor the power in increments to basically cut 20% of state funding as the revenues declined, which they have. And now they project a $14 billion cut hole. So he already started withholding 20% in many areas of the budget, reimbursement for not-for-profits, for our group homes, for example, full day pre-K, which is a grant funded program, not part of the traditional education funding. Many forms of state funding have already been withheld. We were able to persuade him not to cut 20% out of the big September school aid payment, which would have devastated schools throughout the state, absolutely led to more layoffs. And October as well, he's agreed not to withhold that money. But we're not waiting till next April and March. We are fighting to get federal money. And I've been very engaged in this. From the day we finished the budget, I was on the phone with Senator Gillibrand's office, Senator Schumer's, and our House members arguing for dedicated education money, state money, and money for our localities, because they don't have the tax revenue now to provide the necessary services, and the state does not have money to bail them out. So we need, this is a moment of shared sacrifice. We have stepped up for every other state when they had a national emergency. Hurricanes, floods. This is a time our state needs help, and people should put their partisanship aside, come to the best compromise and get some money on the table. Without that, we really, really have a dark future here.
Could we do this in increments and get everybody down in D.C. too? And you see the battle going on every day back and forth. We'll give you this. No, we'll take that from you. No, let's go back to this. And 3 months later, when I think we should have had a second bill to help everybody through this pandemic, we're still going back and forth on this day by day. Could we do this in increments where the states and everything else that needs to be taken care of in a bill in Congress, where a state like New York gets at least some money to function and we can go back and hand more to the states later on? We see this when the budget has to be propped up in Washington. Seems like 1, 2, 3 times a year, some years, where they work out an emergency deal for 3 months. They go back, do it again, fund again. Can we fund this way, partially, step by step?
Oh, I think absolutely. And I think Nancy Pelosi, to her credit, came down by half in her initial request to say, let's get something done. And I do think we're in such a partisan environment because of the presidential election that it is difficult. But I think there should be really every effort made to do what you've described, John. Get something there. I'm hopeful. You know, I believe that with a Democratic U.S. Senate, regardless of where people are from, they understand this is a moment when federal government can help us. New York has to have a balanced budget. It can't just borrow its way or tax its way exclusively out of this, although I favor both of those as incremental help. So I'm hopeful that with a new U.S. Senate and, in my opinion, a new U.S. president, we can get to a better resolution. But in the interim, a short-term solution that helps our states, our counties, our cities, our villages and towns, and our schools, really, I just have to put that in there, would be a fantastic compromise if we could get it.
And I talk to people on both sides, and I think I hear too many people who say, no, I have to have it my way. No, I have to have it my way. And I suggest, well, how about something is better than nothing, and we can come back with something more down the road? And do you see, on a state level at least, when it comes to negotiating, do you see that being the way that things go in New York State more often than it goes nationally?
Oh, absolutely. Just an example of last year's budget. We were walking into COVID, March 30th. We were up there physically when the rest of the Capitol was closed. We knew things were going south very quickly. There was original proposal to cut education funding. We were able to use the Federal CARES Act to offset the proposed cut at schools. So we just had to compromise, to your point. We couldn't get what we wanted. We cut Medicaid. I think it was a mistake. You know, now our hospitals need the money. But this is the nature of compromise. And I believe in compromise. I don't think you achieve a great deal. There are matters of principle. They come about on occasion. But when you're talking about state money and state decision-making, you do the best you can. Argue for your point, you know, fight as hard as you can, and then compromise and get the best deal you can. I think that's why I've been a successful legislator, getting bills passed, getting money passed for the things I believed in, getting issues raised, like I described in the bail that I thought were important. I believe in compromise. I'm willing to compromise. And I find that my constituents are willing to accept that if they feel that in good faith, you tried your best.
State Senator Shelley Mayer, 37th District here in Westchester on Westchester Talk Radio, westchestertalkradio.com. I'm John Marino, and we are brought to you in part by our good friends at places like Entergy, the Indian Point Energy Center, supporting our communities through April of 2021. White Plains Hospital, thanks to our heroes at White Plains Hospital for all they have done throughout this COVID-19 pandemic of 2020. Wartburg Healthcare and Rehabilitation in Mount Vernon, Park Sterling Realty in Bronxville, and Michael Labriola, landscape design and construction in Armonk. Shelley Mayer, let's talk education now. In the reopening of schools a few weeks back, we see we have to take a step backwards now in Brooklyn, in Queens, in Rockland, in Orange County, upstate too, in a community there as well, looks to be something that has to be done as well. With the reopening of schools, have we been moving in the right direction with that at least, or do we need to get back to, as some say, a regular everyday scenario where kids are in the classroom every day and forget this online learning?
I don't think that's pragmatic. I don't think that's safe, and I don't think that's practical. I think districts are doing the best they can. I think many students, parents, and staff are adjusting to this remote hybrid model that we have, kids in some days, staff in some days. You know, one, there are legitimate safety concerns in schools, particularly in old buildings without ventilation. There are challenges if we're going to have social distancing, where we have to reduce the number of students in the classroom. So that means that the remote needs to be staggered. It is very challenging. We need to look at what other countries have done and get some best practices. I was on the phone with a bunch of superintendents yesterday. We need to celebrate when we have successes and things go well in this environment, and not only talk about all the things that go wrong, because teachers and principals and boards of education and parents are stepping up and doing remarkable work in a very challenging time. I would love to see every child back in school and every staff person back in school. I just don't think the moment is safe enough to do it. And I think we are in, as you would say, a compromise, and compromises are imperfect. I think we will hopefully get to a better place and ultimately can have children in school more days of the week, which as most parents, forget about politics, parents want it, parents need it, and children need it. But we have to be smart and mindful and safe. And frankly, our teachers, our staff, and many parents are nervous. In New York City, about half of the parents have chosen to keep their kids home full time. They don't trust it as being safe. So we're not there yet for full-time in-person learning. There are schools that are doing it. Many of the religious schools are doing it, and parents are very pleased. I give them tremendous credit. They are really rising, making it to the challenge. But I think in our public schools, it's very challenging, and we're not ready to do it yet.
It seems like part of the problem with virtual learning is that not every area, obviously economically, where parents can afford to make sure their kids have what they need, the right laptop, the right iPad, et cetera. And is it maybe pie in the sky on my part to think that the state education department should provide for every student in New York State the learning tools that they need, whether it be making sure every kid has a laptop, has an iPad, whatever they need? Or is that, hey, Marino, where are you going to get the money from? You want to pay for it?
Well, I have an idea, not on the devices, but I am introducing a bill this week to require the companies, for-profit companies that provide broadband, to provide quality broadband to every student and every school during the duration of the state of emergency. I think they have to put profit aside for this short period of time, stop competing with each other, make it free and available and quality, not the cheapest version, but the version that I would buy, that's what version they should have, because it's as essential as a paper and a pencil used to be in the school building if we're going to have virtual learning. On the devices, some districts have really done their best, bought them. I mean, it does raise your question, like John Marino, where's the money? State ed does not have the money unless we budget them or get more money from the feds to buy devices. But ultimately, if we're going to do this, kids need the tools. It's one thing to say be home, but if you can't learn at home because you don't have the device and you don't have the broadband, it's basically denying the kid education. And we have a constitutional obligation to provide these children education. So we are going to have to get to that place. I am pushing this broadband idea. I've been talking about it publicly. Now I'm going to put the bill in. I hope the governor convenes these providers and puts them in a room and says, for another 6 months, hopefully, you know, we get to the end of this, put aside profit and make this work for our students. So
how about parents who say, I have no place to send my kids during the day? School is my babysitter.
Yep. Well, that's, you know, schools never wanted to hear it. The other thing I have said is we have to stop this silo approach of childcare versus schools. Because you know how parents think of it, like you just described, John. I have to go to work. I don't care whether you call it school, childcare, after school. That's not my problem. My problem is I need to go to work. My child needs to be somewhere. We should integrate these areas more effectively so they're talking to each other. We've been working on that locally with the Child Care Council of Westchester to bring them into the schools and make sure they're all talking to the superintendents. After school, which was such an important part of school life to me as someone who's a proponent for working parents, that needs to be part of the conversation as well. But whether schools liked it or not, schools were a place that parents could go to work and leave their children and now they don't have it. There's a number of interesting substitutes out there, and I think we'll get more, but for essential workers particularly, they do not have a choice.
Social justice, police reform, you talk about bail reform. What do all those words mean to you?
Well, I think there's two things. Bail and discovery reform were done before the murder of George Floyd. They were part of a long-scale effort to address fundamental inequities in who got incarcerated before their trial. That's what that was about. If someone had money and they could avoid being put in prison, that's one thing for a low-level offense. If someone didn't have money, got put in jail pending a trial for a low-level offense, that was something we were trying to address. We did address it. We made certain crimes bail eligible and other low-level crimes and nonviolent crimes non-bail eligible. We modified that bill, as I mentioned, in response to some concerns, particularly from the suburbs, and we made more offenses bail eligible. After the murder of George Floyd, I think there's no question a national reckoning about our relationship with race and our relationship between the police and communities of color. We passed 10 major pieces of legislation that the governor signed, including banning chokeholds, giving the attorney general authority over every fatality in an interaction between police and a civilian, obviously amending and changing 50A, which protected the disciplinary records of the police from disclosure. And there were other things we did. I think those were wise. I think they were legitimate. I think they were path-breaking and important, and the time was right to do them. I've done my best to explain my position, but I would say the vast majority of people in my district supported my views. People of all races and ages, on the whole, were very, very supportive. There are those who disagree. I respect that. I've been meeting with them and talking with them since my vote. Many of them are very angry. I've been a longstanding supporter of law enforcement. I've had a great relationship with all of my departments, certainly in Yonkers, where I live and where I was in the assembly for a long time. And I look forward to continuing that. It isn't to say we won't disagree, but I think our police will be well served by some of the things that we passed and some of the requirements the governor put in place for re-examining the policies and procedures of every department in New York State and aiming for a higher standard and a more uniform standard.
Governor Cuomo has requested, has demanded, really, that every locality across the state by April of 2021 give him a police reform plan. Do we need to rethink how we hire people for police departments across the state or maybe even nationally, that some people may not be, I hate to use the words cut out for being a cop, but not every line of work is for everyone. How can we find out who maybe should be or should not be a police officer, maybe a little bit better than what we've done so far?
Well, we have a psychological screening, physical screening, aptitude test, and the state civil service test. There's a number of other factors that people think ought to be included, and these are things that ought to be part of the conversation of every local police department. For example, there are localities where people believe there should be a residency requirement, or at least a parameter or perimeter that people have a feel for the community. For example, I represent Portchester, 70% Spanish-speaking. It's very important that a significant portion of the department speak Spanish, in my opinion. They don't have to be native Spanish speakers, but if they're going to be responding to calls and encouraging a cooperative relationship, I think there should be more of that. I think one of the issues that I've seen is after the academy, and they come back to in Westchester, they go to a very good academy, which George is reviewing the policies to try to strengthen and improve that, and I give him credit for that. Then they come back into the department. You know, frequently you can tell early on someone is not, as you say, sort of cut out or a good fit or needs improvement. Either they have hostility, they start with anger instead of starting with another approach. I don't think that our civil service laws allow us to make the necessary changes and disciplinary proceedings early on in a police officer's career. not necessarily get rid of them, but to say you need more training in this. You need to adjust your attitude in this. We can bring people along. I think it is very important that our departments continue to attract Black and Latino and women and have the forces start to be more representative of the diverse communities we represent. In the old days, and I grew up in Westchester, Westchester was predominantly white and many were middle class. That's not the case anymore. 40% Hispanic in Westchester, many, many poor people in the communities I represent were struggling incredibly because of COVID and they lost their jobs and they are either not eligible for unemployment or they have no income replacement. We have diverse, fantastic communities. It's really an honor to represent them. Yonkers, Eastchester, I mean, people, Tuckahoe, you know, all of these communities, as you mentioned, New Rochelle and even Bedford, we need departments that are comfortable with the diversity of the communities they police and in a perfect world are more representative of them.
State Senator Shelley Mayer, 37th District here in Westchester. We thank you for being part of Westchester Talk Radio, and I look forward to speaking with you again soon.
Thank you, John. Pleasure to be with you.
Always good to be with you. Shelley Mayer here on Westchester Talk Radio. I'm John Marino. We are produced by Shark Creative. That's Shark with a C, not a K. WestchesterTalkRadio.com. The Cup of Joe, political show brought to you by, made possible by our good friends at places like Entergy, the Indian Point Energy Center, supporting our communities through April of 2021 at Entergy. Lipolis Electric, don't be left in the dark. Get Lipolis. Hightower, Westchester, managing your wealth to a fiduciary standard. White Plains Hospital, thanks to our heroes at White Plains Hospital for all they've done throughout this COVID-19 pandemic of 2020. Wartburg Healthcare and Rehabilitation in Mount Vernon, Park Sterling Realty in Bronxville, and Michael Labriola Landscape Design and Construction in Armonk. Catch all of our Westchester, Fairfield, Putnam, and Dutchess County Talk Radio programming on our YouTube channel, Shark Creative YouTube.
You're listening to Westchester Talk Radio,
powered by Shark Media, a division of Shark Creative,
and made possible by Entergy, Indian Point Energy Center.
Visit SafeSecureVinyl.com.